Welcome to the African Startup Theater podcast. This podcast is the best analysis on how consumer internet companies in Africa grow. I am Nnamdi Okafo, and with me is my co-host,
Yemi Johnson.
Yemi, what do you think of that intro? I think I did well, right?
Yeah, you killed it, but we'll leave it up to the jury. Maybe the two of us have the same rubbish on, and people are like, what is two faces? But if you're saying that, fuck you.
So yeah, we decided to switch it up a bit, and not only am I doing the intros today, we're doing something different in this episode. Yemi is going to talk of a business he wanted to build based off a previous episode we did. The episode where we spoke about betting, the betting landscape and betting prediction landscape in Africa. Well, Yemi thought of something brilliant and wanted to build it, but then changed his mind. So we're going to discuss on the idea, the business case. We'll talk of the business model, how Yemi planned to go to market, so his GTM, and then how he planned to get demand and retention. And while most of you, and I'm guessing, and myself, would also want to know why he didn't end up building it. So we'll discuss that.
Let me just answer that question. You in your intro, you said a brilliant idea. I'm not really sure it's a brilliant idea, but I think that the approach was somewhat unique, and I think that it could have worked. I just lacked enough bandwidth and motivation to go ahead and do it. But you know what? This idea, I'm putting it out there. And you can DM me anytime if you really want to talk more about this idea and execute it. Because I think that you don't even need to be a developer to execute it. But we're just going to talk about it.
Yeah, we're just going to dive into it. And one of the things you said was that you lack motivation. I just wanted to point out that it's only rich people that lack motivation to build stuff, right? Because, yeah, we should start. So, Yemi, tell us about this brilliant idea.
Stuff isn't brilliant.
Okay, somewhat brilliant idea. I've had the idea, so I know it's brilliant, but yeah, Yemi.
Okay, so let me make a business case for this. We already spoke about the sports prediction market, and I literally called it a scam. And so it's a bit surprising that I'm trying to do something in that same market. And so the way I'm thinking about it is different. It's we can go in marketplace model. Right. Rather than saying, hey, come to me, I will give you good predictions. We say, hey, we have a marketplace where you can buy predictions. And here's the analogy I'm using. Because I used to work in OTAs and OTAs, online travel agencies, which is basically booking.com, Expedia, hotels.ng, Airbnb, right? I think going the route of a marketplace is the best thing. And let me use this analogy, right? OTAs operate a sort of horizontal business that allows them to sell room nights or room availabilities to across different kinds of properties, hotels, vacation rentals, apartments. And what they're really doing is that they're aggregating a lot of room nights and saying, hey, and then generating a lot of demand. And they generate this demand via SEO, like people just searching in Google saying, oh, just searching a hotel. And then you land there and it's like, oh, you see the availability and you can book that room night. And so what OTAs again do is that they aggregate a lot of room nights or hotels, and then they monetize by generating a lot of demand and then saying, and because for the hotels, it's like, oh, you're giving me extra business. Sure, I'm going to take it because hotels are never fully booked. I mean, some are, but most times they're never fully booked. So they don't mind taking a discount by saying, hey, you know what? I'll pay you a 10%, 20% commission on that room night that you just sold for me. Yeah. And the second thing to then note is that because anyone can sort of start an OTA and aggregate all of them, the challenge then becomes that room nights become commodities. And so a commodity is something that you can't really differentiate it from the next. So a room night at booking.com is the same room night at hotels.ng. It's the same room night at Expedia. There's no difference. So a room night at Sheraton, it's literally the same room night. And so the customer, the OTA that wins is one that can differentiate itself based on maybe vast selection or maybe somewhat cheaper pricing, or they just happen to market to you better than the other OTA. And that's how OTAs win. Now, what breaks the business of an OTA again is that maybe they sell you room nights that are not available, or they keep on promoting bad hotels to you. That's what breaks the business of an OTA. And to then win, as I mentioned again, you need to aggressively acquire room nights and aggressively acquire demand at those properties. And so in this analogy that I've played out, the betting websites are sort of the hotels. The spot prediction websites are the OTAs. Predictions are room nights. And you can enter the property type. Again, you can book a hotel, an apartment, a vacation rental, that different spot categories. And so a prediction, anyone can give you a prediction. And as you remember, I said what breaks the business of an OTA is that they sell you a bad room night or a room night that's not available, and you get to the OTA and you get to the hotel and the hotel tells you that, oh, that room night is not available. And so bad predictions are the same thing. For the spot prediction websites, they come in dime a dozen, just like OTAs. Obviously, only a few will win, but there are a lot of OTAs out there. And the ones that eventually win are the ones that can give you the best predictions. And then the hotels then end up being, or the bookmakers, these are the spot betting websites. They are sort of the hotels. It's not a perfect analogy in terms of like the hotels, because you're not really selling the betting websites as OTAs are selling the hotels. But in this case, they're the hotels because you place the prediction on the bookie, which is a spot betting website. And so if you then follow that analogy, you can begin to see how, okay, if OTAs can become big and I build a spot prediction website in a marketplace model, maybe I can build a big business too, right? The challenge now is, what is the quality of the prediction? Because if the predictions are bad, then you would not do well. And so the focus then says, oh, how can we make good predictions? And that's why the marketplace model really works, because marketplace is then taking in, hey, a lot of people are generating predictions, right? And so for instance, Inamdi you can say, hey, I have a prediction for Arsenal Manchester City game, right? And you can say, my prediction, I can give three predictions. One, Manchester City will win the game. Two, Manchester City will maybe score at least three goals, right? You can also say that the goals in the game, you already know that Manchester City scores a lot of goals, right? And so you can say, I also place a prediction that you would win if you bet over 3.5, right? Now you're giving me three predictions, but it's not just you, because there is a wide sea of predictors, right? Or punters in this case, there's a lot of them. And I can say, hey, all of you, give me a prediction. And I can then begin to say, oh, I like your prediction, or I can run some algorithm that then says, okay, the average prediction is this. And over like many, many predictions, I can come up with a model that sort of like establishes that, hey, these people will win. And the reason why this works is that I can look at a history. I can say, you know, there's a history of always predicting over 3.5 odds, or predicting Arsenal games correctly. I can look at that history and say, hey, he's very good at it, and I can give him more weight in my algorithm. And over time, because again, everybody has their own betting strategy. If I'd gone and written a computer program to try and predict Arsenal's performance based on a historical, there's not enough data points. But if I use humans to crowdsource my predictions, each of them are doing their own research, right, on specific games. And a human is always going to outperform a computer on like a very specific task, right? So all of them are doing this task for me, all humans using human brains, right? And then I then run an algorithm on top of their human brains to then select like, this is the best prediction. Now, I don't know if my predictions would always have been correct, or if I would have been able to generate like very good predictions at a very high accuracy rate. It's yet to be determined, but I believe that we could have like gotten to that place. And if we get to that place, it means that a lot of people will find value in what I've built. And this is why the other sporting websites or the sport prediction websites that are using marketplace models, this is why they don't work, because it's like one person, one punter, a few punters that sure, maybe they know Arsenal games well, but they're never always going to be correct, because they're relying on their own predictions rather than saying me relying on many people. And so they will end up selling bad room nights to people, where in our case, we can sell better room nights to people. And so that was the business case I made for this. And overall, it then means that first, because we have so many predictions, we will have more room nights than anybody else. And secondly, we're able to also have better room nights because we are crowdsourcing predictions and running an algorithm on top to know what is a good prediction. And then the last bit is that because, again, it's a marketplace, we don't need to invest so much in launching a new category. The same person there is giving me predictions for Manchester City, can give me predictions for Manchester United, can give me predictions for Chelsea. Probably that same person can also give me predictions for whether the Lakers will win the season, right? And maybe even a prediction for cricket. But even if they can't, it's that I have a lot of humans out there that, like, sports is a huge category. And I have a lot of humans out there that would literally give free predictions and say, hey, dude, come and give me predictions, right? And probably if your predictions are right, I'd pay for them, right? And so so that's why the marketplace model works. And then what then makes it a good business is that if you remember that these predictions, they're literally free. It costs nothing. Like a room night at a hotel, there's a real world cost to it. The hotel actually needs to pay staff. They need to pay for electricity, for cleaning, for plumbing, for different things, right? But in this case, the person that gave me the prediction literally just sat down. Sure, they might have done some research on their computer, but that is research they would have done regardless. And so there is no real cost to them doing it, right? And it means that the pricing can be set at anything. They can set their prices high at $100 per prediction or very low at $1 per prediction, right? Or I myself can even control the pricing if I was at scale and I'm then using a pricing algorithm to sort of get people to buy, to enter, to start using the platform, and then maybe I'd raise prices on them later or whatever. Another thing is that there are also multiple sources of revenue where, sure, I can sell a prediction, but I can also make affiliate fees because I can then suggest to you like where you should place that bet on. And if I think about it deeply, I'm pretty sure there are more sources of revenue to make there. And then the last bit is that everything is content and software. Like, content margins are insane. It's like you write a blog, say you were Strategy, Ben Thompson, you write a piece of blog post, probably took you 2 hours to write, but I don't know, 10k people are paying for that piece of blog post, right? What are the margins there? Those are like, I don't know, it's probably like 99% gross margins, right? There's no real cost. You make it once, you sell it 1,000 times, right? And then we also like merge with software because there's no real world component to it. Unlike most marketplaces where there's a real world component to it, like hotel booking, there's a real world component to it. But here it's just like software and content. So the gross margins are insane. So even if the pricing is low, I'm not really paying for anything, right? So that's why I thought there was a business here. And that's why I invested time and energy to say I wanted to do it. And I'll tell you why we eventually did not do it at the end of this episode.
Awesome. So I think I have one question. The way I understand marketplaces, like, let's use Airbnb, right? You go on Airbnb and then you want to book a 3-day night at Abuja or somewhere like that, right? So you go on Airbnb and then you see an Airbnb that you like and then go there. The Airbnb there asks you, did you like it and stuff like that, right? I know they do some form of vetting to ensure that, you know, the place is of good quality, like you said, so that you don't sell bad nights. But if you're running an algorithm on top of the prediction, that means I'm not dealing with Yemi, a bondan that claims to be very good, right? I'm dealing with the brand that is aggregating all these different bondan trends and stuff. So is it actually a marketplace if it's like that? Because the marketplace involves buying and selling between two people, but I'm not dealing with the second person. Literally just dealing with you, right? What you're doing is just aggregating for other places to sell to me.
Yeah, so one thing I might have missed out is that you're still buying from a specific person. So it's still like a marketplace. What the algorithm just does is that it knows that, okay, this person is going to give you more accurate predictions than that person. And so we can give you a transparent score. And so if you look at all the punters out there, you really don't know their performance. Sure, they can show you screenshots, but anyone can fake a screenshot. And even if the screenshot was legitimate, sure, they won a few times, but are they always winning? Yeah. And if they're always winning, where do they win? Sometimes they win, maybe they predict, they might have an edge in Russian leagues where they know how to fix games, right? I don't know if that punter is fixing games, but if they are, I want to expose that punter to more gamblers so that they can also make a profit, right? So the idea was that the gamblers are buying the predictions directly from the punters, but the algorithm is then giving a transparent score to say, this is how good this person is. And then when we're suggesting people to you, it's that, hey, you want a Manchester City prediction, right? You came search for Manchester City predictions tonight or whatever. And we're going to say, okay, the game is, say, Man U, Arsenal. And it's like, it's different people are giving different predictions, right? You can sort by the different categories of predictions you want. Whether you want it to a over 3.5 prediction, an over 2.5 prediction, a win draw, or is it win draw lose? I don't know what the categories are. Or maybe Arsenal to win, or Manchester to win, or even how many corners will be in the game, yeah. Right? I can give you all the categories and say, this guy, for corner kicks, like, maybe buy a prediction from this guy. You might not see the actual prediction, but when you buy it for, say, $1 or 50 cents, or you could just be like, subscribe for $10 a month, and we will get the best predictions. Like, there are so many ways we can run pricing. Yeah. Because, again, it's free. Like, it's software, it's content. You're not paying anything in real life. And for the actual punters, it's that they're making money from something that they wouldn't make money from before. And I don't know what is, like, the biggest thing I've seen in marketing, or like the way the marketing or the apps or products with the best NPS scores are apps that make you make money. Whoa. It's like, and because money is marketing.
Yeah.
If you're going to give me a lot of money, it's like, dude, I'd do anything it wants.
No, true. I think I have one more question, and it's really around the building of this, right? So it's, okay, well, it's two questions. I think the first question would be, so these punters, do they go and bet, right? Or do they place their bet or whatever on, you know, like Bet Niger and the rest?
Mm-hmm.
And if yes, then how do you get that data to now make your assertions? And then how do I then come and see it, right? Then I think the second thing again is, so usually when people bet on these platforms, they are giving like a code or something.
Mm-hmm.
So you then see all the games like that, right? But people don't bet on like Man U Arsenal and then place a bet on that and then go and bet. So it's like everything is coded as well.
Mm-hmm.
So how do you intend to break all these pieces, and then how did you intend to break up all these pieces and then start making sense of the data and then nudging people to bet that way?
Okay, so the first one is, how do we sort of like see their betting history, right? And so the idea, and this sort of goes into like the go-to-market, right? And we sort of went through multiple iterations of this idea. And so we're going to build tools for people that gamble, because I don't think anyone really builds tools for them. So a tool would have been that, hey, I'd let you know where exactly you're successful in your betting history. So, for instance, these betting platforms, again, don't really have APIs where we can extract information from the user's profile. So what we could have done was that you log into your profile and then we scrape everything on your dashboard, on your account. And because for instance, we would launch each betting website, so we can launch Bet360, Bet Niger, Niger Bet, Bet King, right? And so it requires a lot of engineering where we would have scraped everything in your dashboard. After scraping it, we would then like start in our own database, and we sort of already know that, okay, in the past you have placed all these different bets, right? We can sell you different individual bets. And we can then say, hey, run whatever algorithm, and then say, okay, we think that based on like 1 year's history of you betting, you're really good at this sort of thing, right? And so we can then say, we can then nudge and say, okay, you have like a 83% accuracy on this type of games. Maybe we can then give you some more test games to play, where in a sense it's like you're gambling, but you're not putting in real money. So it's like we then make you play like predict in the future and see how well you still predict them. Or we could just directly list you on the website and just say, hey, dude, we're pushing you into the website. Go give us some predictions, and real world data will come back and tell us if you're a bad predictor. And the thing about marketplaces is that people like to believe that the marketplace itself vetted the people that are selling stuff on marketplace. And yes, they sort of did in the beginning. But the truth is that they can't continue to vet these people. Like Airbnb is not going to continually go and check that the people that list their apartments are acting as good people. Amazon is not going to continue to check that the sellers, it doesn't even know if the sellers are legitimate people. But what happens is that they use the demand side, the consumers, to say, hey, is this a bad person? And that's why there's a review mechanism. And so in our own case, the review mechanism is that you place the prediction. Did you win? Right? And so we control the review system. And then because we're maintaining the algorithm to say if this person is a good predictor or not, we can then begin to rank and derank people. And it's the same thing with Airbnb or any other marketplace out there. They don't know if you're legitimate, but when a customer complains, the customer is a feedback system. When a customer complains, they're going to say, they're going to derank you or outrightly ban you, right? But again, because remember, we don't have any real world components. All we're dealing with is numbers, right? And so we can do everything within software and it should be fast. So that's how we're going to sort of like get historical data of people, where we're just like ask people to log into their dashboard so that we can give them a score. Like we just continue to build like a very excellent tool to tell you that, hey, this is how to let us help you rate your performance. We log into their dashboard, we script their data, we run our own analysis and give them the score they were looking for. And this scripting thing, it's out like, you know, Play, the fintech app that allows you to connect your bank accounts or that thing. That's how they started. And I believe that's what these guys do, Okra and Mono, the fintech APIs things. I mean, no bank is giving them direct. I mean, maybe some banks are, but no bank is giving direct API integration. And I'm surprised that, that CBN or those banks have not come for them. But it just requires a lot of engineering. And I think you asked a second question.
Yes, so the way you know, this website works is that you don't bet across, people rarely bet on like single games. So it's a bunch of like 5, 10, 20 different games, right? All on that one ticket or slip, right? So what's the plan? Is the plan to then spread it across? And I think in the previous episode, right, when we spoke about this, we realized that people are interested in odds, right? Not necessarily over 1.5 or 2.5, right? So really all I want to know is, if I put ₺1,000 on this, is this give me 5 odds, right? And let me pay ₺1,000. So like that's the mindset, and that's why people bet in slips and not like in games. So how did you plan on tackling that?
Yeah, so that the solution to that wasn't yet clear until we entered the market. But the way we would have done it was that, hey, you know what? You want to make money, right? And you want an odd, right? And so people don't mind like 1.1 odds or 2.0 odds or 1.5 odds or 11 odds. And a single game can give you any of those odds, right? You want an 11.0 odd, right? You just need to find a game that gives an 11.0 odd. And so you can search the marketplace and say, hey, which of these punters thinks that there is a chance that an underdog will win? Because if an underdog wins, probably you'll get that 11.0 odds, right? Yeah. So for instance, if who's at the bottom of the league table? Say Sheffield.
Oh, Aston.
Yeah, but okay, let's just say Sheffield plays Manchester City.
Yeah.
Right? The chances of Sheffield ever winning, it's incredibly low.
Yeah.
Right? And so you probably get maybe a 30.0 odd there. But a punter can say, and maybe we have discovered, again, because there's so many punters and gamblers out there, right? We can say, we can find somebody, especially if we give them a free tool that helps them analyze their performance. And that tool, let's say it goes viral, right? Or we grow hack our way of that tool becoming mainstream, right? We get a lot of people coming in, like giving us data, and we can begin to then see who is like in the very top class of performance. And we say we find someone that gives like consistently good odds that are 30.0 on single games, right? A punter can, like, a gambler can, like, find that person in the marketplace and place one bet with them. And it works out. Another thing we could have also done was that we could then maybe run a subscription product directly where people buy that subscription product. So think of how Spotify is a bundle of every artist out there. And so this would be a bundle of the best performing people out there, right? Where we will split the money to them, but ultimately we're telling the person that, hey, there are five games, but the odds in these games are really good. So we think that there's an 80%, 90% chance that everything would go out fine. And we can even be generous enough to say, if it doesn't work out, we will refund your money. And we could maybe price that thing quite expensive, maybe $500 per month, right? But you know that if it doesn't work out for you, or maybe say if only one game cast, we will refund the money. But if more than two games, like, were bad, we will refund your money. So sort of like building
trust
with the people, because what is lacking in those other places is that trust isn't present. And we can build trust by crowdsourcing predictions, letting people do peer-to-peer transactions. We enable those peer-to-peer transactions, right, by putting in a trust score, saying this is why you can trust this person, right? We can enable those peer-to-peer transactions, and also just refunding people's money if stuff doesn't work out. Because again, remember, this is software and content. There's really no real cost to it. Aside, the content is free. The software, sure, we spend some money, but if we raise some venture funding, maybe we raised 500K, probably spend 100 to 100K to build the software, less than that, but let's just say we're paying EU, not US developer salaries, maybe EU developer salaries. spend like 200K to build it, spend another 100K to iterate it, and at some point, like, we're fine, like, the rest is just like making money, like, just like putting money in the bank account.
Okay, well, I think this makes a good segue into the next bit, which is the business model. So yes, run us through. You've already talked about pricing, subscriptions, but was there like a clear focus on what you wanted the business model to be?
Yeah, it's like, it's a marketplace that's tightly controlled. So it's that we are saying, so there is no reviews, like nobody can go and drop a review and say, oh, this guy is good at predicting. It's right. We're responsible for the reviews. And so we will then use the review system to then know who is good and who is bad. The great thing about this is that if people are doing like peer-to-peer transactions, so if a peer isn't giving you good results, you can just move on to the next peer, and it's not our fault. You're not going to look and say, oh, these guys are giving me, like, this platform is giving me bad odds. You're just going to be like, oh, that guy, that punter,
is
horrible. Like, the other punter is great. Let me go there. And you also know that in gambling, like, there are no sure odds. Like, that is a thing that everybody knows. But what we are trying to do is that there's an average, and there are people above the average. So if the average is like 60% accuracy, someone that is at 70% accuracy is worth a lot of money to you. Someone that is at 80%, 90%, of which, like, it's rare. But again, because we're sourcing so much data, we can begin to find people that are like at 80%, 90% accuracy. And it's not just like 90% accuracy across all games, it's that they're 90% accuracy on this type of games. And so you can find 90% accuracy on Arsenal games, 90% accuracy on Lakers games, 90% accuracy on, I don't know, some league in Russia or some league in South Africa, right? Like, there's literally some kid that only cares about South African leagues, right? And I can tell you who will win, right? Or maybe his uncle is a fixer and he's always listening in on their conversations.
Right.
Dude, you just made that kid rich.
Oh, true, true. I know that when I used to still gamble, I was very good at them. The Juniper League in Dutch, I just had a second edition.
Yeah.
And then the Estonian League.
Yeah, so the idea is to find people that are good, like, because we just want to make money. Sure, I like Man U, but do I really want to place a bet on them when they're playing, I don't know, whatever game they're playing, or do I really want to place a bet on a very sure thing?
Yeah, true, true, true.
Yeah, so, and so, again, the business model is a marketplace, and what is even more interesting is where the gross margins are. It's like content and software.
Yeah.
Like, those are insane gross margins, man. The best of both worlds. And then the last bit is the pricing. You can literally do anything with the pricing. I can, because like there's no real world index for how this thing should be priced. The real pricing is in that how valuable it is to me. If I'm going to make $1,000, I don't mind paying you $900 because I'm going to make $100 on top of that.
Right.
So, like, you can do a bunch of stuff with the pricing. And there's still that last bit where, because you want to maintain trust, if it doesn't work out, you refund people's money back.
So, here is my question. Who controls the pricing? Is it because, like, is it the punters or is it...
The punters can put whatever they want, right? Yes. But as the business, it's that, again, I can, the punter, because I'm doing a lot for the punters, which is that, ranking them, generating demand, and they're literally just like they're doing a lot of work, right? I'm the one doing all the work, so even if the punter puts the price, I can take 50% commission, right? So I can play around with those commissions, right? I can probably take 60% commissions. I mean, that might be similar, like, hey, dude, you get a grading, but I can take like huge commissions where in a typical marketplace, you'd see, up staking like 10-20%, and then best case 30%. In this case, because there's no real world cost, I can probably take 50% and I can play around with my margin. I can even say, the punter can say, hey, dude, I'm charging $5 per month, right? And because I can tell that this person that is looking at these odds will probably doesn't mind paying $15 a month, I can price it at 15. Take the 10, take 50% off the 5, and I'm cool.
Jeff Bezos is so proud of you.
Yeah. So, I mean, that's the business I saw.
Yeah.
Right? Again, it's not clear to me that this business would work, but that's the business I saw.
Yeah, because really, right, there's, like you said, there's really no real cost to this. So it's, how much am I willing to pay for this game, right?
Mm-hmm.
And to people that really bet, right, and gamble, I'll say quite a lot, because it's the key thing for everyone is to know, okay, yeah, does this work, right? Am I certain of, like, you know, the results and stuff like that? You are going to handle the payments.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so, like, there's never going to be, like, any offline or direct-to-bank transactions.
It depends on the payment gateways in different countries. So maybe a country that they do a lot of bank transactions. But the point is that I'm the one, like, I'm everything, right? The platform does everything. The only thing is the punters just, like, give predictions, right?
Okay. That works. Let's talk on how you planned on approaching this, right? What was your go-to-market?
Yeah, so we needed to bootstrap the marketplace with supply first and then figure out demand. And the thing about this is that, one other thing I should mention on the pricing is that gamblers bet. The average gambler will tell you that, the average gambler that will say, okay, he doesn't bet everything, just has a budget, will tell you that his budget. And from my surveys, just talking to Nigerians that gamble, they would say their budget is, for a month is like 15K, which is like $40-$50, right? And to be honest, they're going to go a bit more than $50, right? So their half average ticket sizes range from like 50 to probably 1,000-3,000K per month, right? So it's like someone that is betting that amount of money, and it's not just like, probably half of sport fans place a bet, right, or gamble some money. I'm not saying they're addicted to it, but they gamble some money, right? So the market is huge, the time is huge, the ticket sizes are huge, and these are mostly men that make money, right? Or men that need to make money from gambling. So it's like, it just seems like a good business. But going into the go-to-market, right? This is a marketplace that requires demand and supply. And the great thing about this, my marketplace, is that both the people that are supplying me predictions and the people that need predictions, they're the same side of the coin, right? It's that the person that needs a prediction could also be giving me predictions,
yes,
right? And so it's like, dude, you're already like making predictions on, say, Bet360. Why not just bring those predictions that you have made and monetize it on the platform? It was then, how do we get this initial traction? And I went through like several iterations. And I say we because like it was myself and a couple of other people that were brainstorming on this. And so the first way was that we would build the tool, as I mentioned, where anyone can come and analyze their betting history. But it required a lot of engineering. And it's like, okay, what can we do that has less engineering that we can easily just start with? And so we said, okay, let's scrap that. We can build that tool later in the future. And the idea was that we were even just going to keep on building more and more tools for sport fans and gamblers, because nobody's really building tools for these guys on the internet. There are more marketing tools, there are more developer tools, there are more, and those markets are not that huge, right, compared to like the sport prediction market. So the next thing we thought was, okay, you know what? We discovered that there are a lot of punters that were running stuff in WhatsApp groups and Telegram groups. And we thought that, hey, what if we got those people, they've already built an audience. What if we got those people to give us their audience, right? And then when we launch maybe the scraper for a betting website, we just tell their audience that, hey, you know what? Use this thing to like give yourself some to analyze your betting history, right? But the idea was that we needed gamblers to come in. And so we were going to go that route. And so we were talking to punters that were already running WhatsApp groups. I even joined a few, right? Paid some money to join a few that were paid, joined some free ones, and I saw all sort of things, right? So we built a tool, and the way it would have worked was that the person, rather than like just joining, asking people to DM him on Instagram or Twitter, would like refer people to their landing page. People can click on subscribe. When they click on subscribe, they add their card details, they log in, add their card details, and we'll automatically debit their cards. And if we are unable to debit their cards, we'll send them a reminder email saying, hey, dude, we can debit your card. If you don't want us to kick you out of these groups, you need to pay us the money. And then the next thing then became, okay, how do we manage because if we're selling a solution to the punter saying, hey, we would help you accept payment, we also need to sort of help you manage your groups. And these groups were largely on Telegram and WhatsApp. And so we're then thinking, do we move the groups into our own app where the punter would, everybody would then need to have our own app where they download the app and the punter posts the odds on the app, maybe via a WhatsApp interface, like a regular chat interface. But there were some product concerns there because what if the punter wants to like chat with people and stuff? And then the second case was that what if we just, and also we're going to tell people to be downloading new apps, which I'm not sure they wanted to. And so we're like, what if we build like a Telegram bot that like removes people from the groups and a WhatsApp bot that removes people from the groups. But building a WhatsApp bot requires a lot of engineering, because the way we're going to do it was that we're going to like open, say, WhatsApp in a browser and then run a script in that browser that goes and identifies person's phone numbers and removes them. So like a human manually adding and removing people, but rather than using a human, automating it, but that requires like some really serious engineering. And it brought us back to the first problem of like, we still need to do a lot of engineering to scrape the different betting websites. Because it's not just scraping them, it's that we need to format the data properly, understand what each thing is, and be able to then analyze the data. So we said that, okay, that seems like a lot of work. What can we do? We then landed on, what if we just run a competition, right? And it's like, dude, you really would have gone to, say, Bet Niger or wherever else to use your own actual money to bet. What if we will still give you a betting platform where you can bet, but this time you're using your own real money. It's that there is no money involved. But if you are really good, we will pay you an obscene amount of money, right? And so there's a cash prize, and we could have done the competition in different ways where it's that, oh, whoever is at the top of the leaderboard will win the cash prize, or if you predict maybe all 30 games correctly, you would win this game. And so we would contain the competition to like a 30-day window where you need to maybe play 30 to 50 games, right? And if you maybe make it past, maybe if your score is, say, obviously you need to play a minimum of 30 games because we need you to play many iterations of that game for us to be able to know if you're good. Because you could play 5 games and get 4 correct and we think you're good. So you need to play a lot of games. But we also need to decide who is good in a short period of time so that we can keep on getting more people into the marketplace. And so maybe you play 30 games or we give you 50 games. You only need to play at least 30 games, right? And then within a 30-day window, and then we would then look at your accuracy, right? Whoever has the highest accuracy will top the leaderboard and win the grand prize. So the grand prize would be like $5,000. And that's a good amount of money. Maybe second place would win $1,000, third place $500, right? You would have predicted fun. Also, it invites people that are really interested in sports, but wouldn't necessarily gamble, right? And so we can attract that audience too, because I don't think that's even a more premium audience, because they're really interested in sports. They're not really just about the money. It's that they're really interested in sports, right? They've done all the analysis. They wouldn't normally have been on a gambling platform because they don't like to gamble. And so we can attract them because it's like, we're going to give them, they're not putting in any money, but we're giving them free money. And then, because it's free money, it's a competition, we expect that many people would play this thing. And so in that way, we acquire supply and demand at the same time, right? The supply would be whoever, so we know the average and say the average accuracy is 50%, 40%, 30%, 60%. Whoever is above this average would probably, maybe we can just take the 99th percentile or the 90th percentile and say whoever is here is a very good punter. And we can go tell other people that didn't make it and say, dude, thank you for playing this game. You can keep on playing, right? Because we don't want to stop you from playing the game. But if you are someone that gambles, right, and you're looking for good odds, these people also play the same game as you, and they perform way better than you. Don't you want to buy odds from them? Don't you want to buy predictions from them? And I think that's a really compelling upsell for them. And so, all of a sudden, we've attracted both supply and demand. And that was the model we're going to then settle on, which was that just run a competition, because now the ocean is way larger where we're attracting anyone that wants to make money. But not just anyone that wants to make money, we can then see a pool of everyone, both the bad and the good. But it gives us a lot of demand where we don't need to do anything to get demand. And it gives us a lot of supply because we can then see who will actually win our money. Okay. So that was a good market.
And that's interesting. Now, I think my question is, how did you plan on getting the first initial traction? So yes, you said you're going to run competitions, but were there channels you felt that you could leverage on to get this initial place? But I think, I'm not so sure, but I think betting prediction sites are banned on like most social media sites. So how did you plan on doing that?
Yeah, most prediction websites are banned on Facebook and other ad platforms. Right, but this game, this is not a betting prediction thing. This is a And also, like, I like to think of as the idea of a prediction marketplace, because it can actually go beyond just betting, right? It's like, who will win the elections, right? Or would the price of Bitcoin fall? Will the price of oil rise? We can go into all sorts of predictions. So it becomes a prediction marketplace. But then I said, it's like, how do you get traction? And so it's that this is a game. It's free to play. And free to play games are not banned from most of these apps. But free to play games where you win money are banned on Facebook. But we can get smart around that and maybe send the people to some landing page where it's like, it's a free to play game, and then upsell them on the one where they make some money, right? So maybe you can play free to play version, or you can play the version where you make money, right? We can get smart around how we use ads. And so the idea was that we're going to bootstrap this with ads, like get audience with ads, and then also like just be community driven. And we were thinking about community was mostly through Reddit, and through Reddit, through Twitter, because like there's a huge community of like gamblers on Twitter. So that's how we're going to go about it. Like for this competition, but in terms of like just growing the marketplace in the future, there are then many more channels we can explore. But for this competition, because it's like a very good way to drag in a lot of supply and demand, paid ads would work well, and we can sort of like add some, we can sort of tell like what's the value. Like for instance, the paid ads would have been really, I imagine it would have been really cheap to acquire, because it's like a free-to-play game where a lot of people don't mind playing the game. And maybe we can find an ad algorithm that allows us to do free-to-play games where you win money. And people don't mind to play it. I'm pretty sure like all those times where you go to some illegal website and it's like, oh, there are 10 women near you, or get this amount of, or make $1 million a day. I'm sure those things get a lot of clicks. I mean, a lot of people on the internet now are more savvy to know not to click those links. But yeah, it's sort of like the same dynamics, right? So that's how I would have bootstrapped the marketplace with the competition, and then promoting the competition via paid ads and community-driven stuff.
Did you think to consider using a partnership with an actual betting platform to run the competition, or did you plan on having the bets on your own platform?
No, the idea was, so we're building in a way where we don't want to take permission from anybody, right? Everything should be done on our own terms, because it's like, I've been there where I email people and it's like, oh, we want to do this thing with you. Like, and people have emailed me where, in different businesses I've been at, where we want to do this thing with you. The conversations just drag on, and many times like there isn't real value flowing in both ways, and it's not really sure that we could have. Again, those companies, most of them have APIs. At least the ones in Africa don't have APIs. But this then brings me to a conversation still on the go-to-market. So again, it would make sense that we launch in an English-speaking market,
right?
And it's like, where are the English-speaking markets? There's Africa, which has a lot of English-speaking countries.
There's Europe.
There's Europe, or mostly just the United Kingdom,
yeah.
Right?
True.
There is the Americas, or just North America, and there's Australia, mm-hmm. Right? Now, for English-speaking markets, probably a city in the United States is bigger than all of Africa for whatever thing you want to sell, right? Africa is not, I mean, I'm sure the betting market in Africa is probably in the billions of dollars. But if it is in the billions of dollars in Africa, in a country like the United Kingdom, it's probably in the multiples of billions of dollars. I mean, by multiples, I mean like, if billions of dollars is 9 digits, in the United Kingdom, it's probably like 10 digits, right? And then in the United States, it's probably like 10 to 11 digits. Right, that's how big shit is. Like in terms of just projecting, like how big can stuff be, right? And so it's like, okay, Africa is a small market. And it's like the same energy to take us to build for Africa is the same energy to take us to build for anywhere else. And because we're building a marketplace, geography is really important, right? Geography is really important, because you do well in one geography and you can scale out of that geography. You can go with a marketplace model of like, oh, I'm going to launch everywhere at once.
Yeah.
Dude, it doesn't work that way. Even for most products, it doesn't work that way. You launch in one market, do well in that market, expand to other markets, whether it's like expanding vertically or horizontally or geographically wise, whatever way, you do well in one niche, you expand to other niches. And so it was important that we select the market well. And even in Africa, it's more of like there are many small African countries. And so we can just say we're doing Africa. It's that we're doing Kenya, or we're doing South Africa, or we're doing Nigeria, or we're doing Ghana. And even in Africa, the only big betting markets are Nigeria, Kenya, probably South Africa. And then the other betting markets are not as huge as this market. And so it's like, okay, Africa is a no. Now let's look at Australia, the United Kingdom. And the United Kingdom, big soccer market, right? But not so many other sports. I mean, there's cricket and there are other sports, but it's like soccer, huge. Every other thing, small. Right? And it's like, yeah, maybe not so much, right? And also, there's a lot of saturation in the United Kingdom because, like, the soccer market there is just huge. And so a lot of people are trying to do something, run a prediction website in that space. And so it's going to be really hard to stand out. And then it's like Australia, also big. I don't even know what sports they play there, but there's also like a huge market. But it's like, it seems so far away. And it's like, it's not as big as the United or as the EU or the United Kingdom specifically. And we could have also done other markets in the EU, but it's that they're not English speaking. And like, we're an English speaking team. We can expand at some point, but it's like for the GTM, we need to do English, right? And then there's the United States. United States, big market for sports. Soccer not so huge, meaning that many other people in the world are not building for them, right? Because soccer is not so huge. Many other people in the world are focused on soccer. But they have football, American football. They have the NBA. They have the MBL, which is Major Baseball League, or is it Major League Baseball or whatever, MLB, so Major League Baseball. And they have, I think they have, there's American football, there's basketball, there's baseball. I think there's something else. I don't remember right now. But they have those three big categories. Big sport market, people with deep pockets. To be honest, I don't know where the people in the United States see money from, but it's like the perfect answer. Like, every channel you need is available there, right? The only challenge is that gambling is not allowed in all states. But again, we're not doing gambling. We're doing prediction marketplace. Show me where it's not allowed.
I hear in like my next question.
No, I'm zoom.
Okay.
Yeah, and even on that, it's that gambling is something that most states in the United States are embracing. So if the market is $20 billion big today, right, and the UK market is maybe $20 billion big today, tell me which one is going to grow faster in the coming years. Yeah, because like most states are going to legalize this thing the same way they did for weed.
Yeah, true.
So we launched there.
But here, my question now is, were there regulatory concerns, especially the fact that you wanted to process these payments,
right?
So you were a marketplace that was going to hold people's money, and then there was the risk of, then there is the gambling part, and then you're also willing to offer refunds. Right, so in a way, you are closer to a gambling site than the average betting prediction site. Let's see this stuff, right? Look at that, get out of this, right? So, were there regulatory concerns around that?
I mean, I didn't see any, but then again, I didn't look hard for regulatory concerns. Aside that, I know that there are states where gambling isn't allowed, but it doesn't mean that, I mean, sure, it's not allowed, but the people in us can use a VPN to go gamble in another state where it's allowed, right?
True.
It's like Twitter is banned in Nigeria, but I'm tweeting every day. Wait, I'm not tweeting every day. I don't know what Twitter is.
I'm not here. You tweet. Wow. Damn it, man.
Yeah, no, like only when I travel outside the country. Barry, I'm not tweeting. But yeah, so there aren't that many. And also, the reason why I'm offering you refunds is because I know that people are probably going to be grieved that, hey, I gave you some money, but my odds did not work out. And so because I don't want a lot of like people requesting cash backs, or like disputing transactions, which will give me problems with my payment gateway, it's that, sure, I don't mind refunding you back. And for you, it's like, oh, these guys are so nice. They really go the extra mile to build trust. And for me, it's like, it's a win-win. It's like, I build trust on one side and I prevent you from like, what's the name? Yeah, with the payment gateways, right? And also, it makes it easier for me to even convert people where the person can say, oh, I can pay this amount of money and get a good prediction. And if the prediction doesn't work out, I'm going to get a refund.
The person, like, so the person makes sense. It's like,
are these people Santa Claus? Right? Is it Christmas? Is it my birthday? So it's like, like it just makes sense,
yeah.
Right? Yeah.
Mm-hmm. It does make sense, right? So now let's just talk about how you plan on growing the product, right? Getting demand, retaining users, acquisition, activation, the whole nine yards. Let's quickly go through it. How did you think of that?
Okay, so we've done the GTM.
Yeah.
Like we're getting a lot of inbounds via the upselling them. And it's that's working great. It's like, what is the next funnel to build? Mm-hmm. Now, the next funnel is just SEO, right? And it's that, again, remember that I have for my competition, I can run competitions for soccer, for baseball, for basketball, for different things. And I can even run competitions on each league, right? And I can run these competitions in different countries. And so I'm just going to be getting a lot of like, leads from different parts of the world. Say I'm scaling this thing. So I'm just going to scale out that competition thing. Because again, I've not done it, but in my thinking, it makes sense. And it's just going to be an engine that runs itself. Probably what would happen is that I'm going to say, okay, it cost me $1,000 to get 1,000 people to play this competition. On average, I'm going to find 3 gems from 1,000 people. Those 3 gems are going to fetch me $1,000 a month. I'm going to get maybe from the 997 people, 100 of them will get on my marketplace and start trading. These 100 people will pay combined another $1,000 a month. No, say these 100 people will pay me, say, $10 a month. On this money, I'm going to make 50% commission. So you can multiply that 100 people paying $10 a month. That's $1,000. Make 50% commission. That's $500 in 1 month. The 3 really good predictors, within that first month, they can start making $1,000 each. That's $3,000. Divide it by half. I mean, since I'm taking 50% commission, that's 1.5. Making 2.5 within the first month, right? So spent $1,000. Broke even in the space of 1 month on 2.5, and this is subscription revenue, more money.
True.
Right now, let's say I refund people. Say refund rate is 50%. I'm still making. So say I refund my 2.5. I refund half of all the money I make per month.
1,050.
Yeah, I still make 1,050. I still broke even on the first month.
True.
Even if I refunded 90% of the money, sure, I didn't break even on the first month of my paid ads activity. But I can determine my LTV and say I'd break even within the first year, right? And I probably am sitting on a lot of floats, right? So even when I'm funding people, I'm not putting the money back in their accounts. I'm putting it in their wallets. So I have floats.
That's true.
I can do a bunch of shit with floats. I can start a different business on the float. Maybe I have $1 million in floats. At any point in time, people will liquidate 10% of that. I can probably take 30% of that, put it in Bitcoin, make some money, right? It's risky, but I have floats, man. Who's going to come after me? Who's going to liquidate their money? They don't know that I'm trading Bitcoin on their money, right? Because it's float. And I don't need to tell them what I'm doing with the floats.
That's true.
Right? So, dude, It's like there's just so many ways like this thing. It makes business sense. But again, that's one way to keep on growing the market. The second way is that is SEO. It's that and to find more demand, and it's that. Remember what I said about the OTA model, where it's that OTAs aggregate room nights at every hotel, right? And so what it is, and they're just writing on the brand name of real world entities. For instance, Radisson Blue is a real world entity, has built real world brand. People are going on the internet, searching in Google for Radisson Blue because they have intents to transact with this real world entity. And OTA pops up, says, dude, if you want to transact with them, I can like facilitate that transaction. And so the same thing happens to, right? There are a lot of gamblers out there looking to place bets on real world entities. So it's that, or looking to make research on real world entities. These real world entities are the teams. It's like, oh, Man U's game tonight, Man U's game prediction, this, that, right? Scale it across every team in the world. Scale it across every category of sports in the world, whether it's boxing, soccer, basketball, whatever it is. And in each league or in each type of sport, there are multiple teams, there are multiple leagues, there are multiple ways you can bet. And so I can easily scale out a million pages SEO-wise. I'd probably get, even if I was getting 10 visits per page, that's like 10 million visitors a month. Now, SEO is, as we already know, it's mostly high intent visits, right? And these keywords I'm skipping over, they're probably going to be high intent keywords. Not like, why is Ferguson leaving Manchester United? Or why did Ronaldo come back to Manchester United? Those are not the keywords I'm going after. I'm going after like, will Ronaldo score tonight? Will Manchester City Arsenal prediction, right? Or Manchester City will win? I'm going after high intent keywords. It's good across like a million pages, right? Get 10 million visitors a month. Like you can already play out the maths. Like free traffic, give them predictions, show them like why you should subscribe, give them like your money gets refunded to you if it doesn't work out. It makes sense.
It does make sense.
Yeah. So that's how it should have gone. And then other channels would then be, we could also run paid ads, but again, it becomes really tricky because most platforms allow paid prediction, they don't allow prediction websites. So it would be, how do we find these paid ads? So maybe we can use influencer networks and affiliate networks where an influencer, and we could use spot influencers or so. I don't know if there are laws, I mean, in certain leagues, there might be laws preventing them from promoting like prediction websites or something like that. But I could also begin to, I mean, I really don't know how the paid marketing would work in this case, but I already have some free channels already I'm using. And I can also do like a very good referral network where it's that refer your friends and we would add more money to your wallet. Right? And again, we adding more money to your wallet, it's not real money, to be fair, because we can add $10 to your wallet. You subscribe to a punter, we are still keeping 50% of that money. So we literally gave you $5. Now for that punter, we could, again, we're holding their money down, so we still have floats. And so, in a sense, it's like the money never left us, right? Until the punter is ready to cash out. And we can make the punters cash out every 30 days.
Sure.
Right? So, there's this thing where even though you're paying money out in finance, there's a term they use where, because you have a lot of float on your balance books, you can use that float to pay off other people and like, you never, like, you have a lot of cash on your balance. It's like Amazon. Amazon pays out every 30 days, or I think every 30 days. So even when a seller makes a sale on Amazon, they don't get the money immediately. Amazon keeps the money. Amazon can use that money for anything, right? And at the end of 30 days, they can then pay you out the money.
Mad cash flow.
Yeah! It's like just too much cash on the balance books.
That's crazy.
Yeah, so, and again, upsells are quite easy. It's that if you're already making money on the platform, we can upsell you on just more things, right? It's like, oh, you did well on this Arsenal game. There's a Man U game to play. And so you can go from spending $10 with us or $5 with us per month to spending $100 with us per month. Like, it's really easy to upsell you because it's like, you're making money, so you're fine.
True.
Right. It's just an arbitrage. And for retention, again, it's that because it's a marketplace model and gamblers have LTV with gambling platforms. We're just transferring that LTV to a subscription product. They would have bet regardless with these betting platforms. Maybe volumes might be low during off-season periods, which is normal. And we can even be, we can be nice to these people. We can say, oh, we will pause your stuff during off-peak betting periods, right? And resume your subscription on peak betting periods. And the reason why we can be really generous is that the business model, it allows us to be generous because the gross margins, dude, they're just incredibly sexy.
True.
Like, there's nothing sexier than it. Even Facebook gross margins are not that sexy. Because Facebook, literally, it's like they get content from all of you, they get eyeballs. Yeah. They don't pay anyone for the inventory they sell to advertisers. Or like Google that splits the inventory money with different people. Sites like their SEM business where they don't split the money. But like YouTube, they split the money with a person that produces the content. And yeah, display ads, AdSense, they split the money. Facebook doesn't split any money. That's what makes Facebook an incredible business. But again, I've spoken a lot about this and you're like, dude, why did you stop this business?
Yeah, that was definitely the next question. So why didn't you build it?
I mean, there are a couple of things. The first thing is that at the end of this day, this business is an arbitrage on the betting platform. But every business itself is an arbitrage on the betting platform. Like, for instance, advertisers pay money to Facebook so that they can get visitors to our website, and some of those visitors will convert. And it's that you're paying $10 to Facebook so that a user can pay you $30. And you know that, or that $30 that you get, the user says pays you $100. You keep $30. Of those $30, $10 went to Facebook, $20 is your profit. Right. And it's the same thing here. But at the end of the day, everything gets arbitraged away. But again, that's a solid reason not to do this, because we don't even know at what point everything gets arbitraged away. Right, because the arbitrage here is quite huge. It's not like they are very narrow margins.
Yeah.
It's a huge arbitrage. I just think the prime reason why I didn't do it was that I didn't have bandwidth to do it. So I was going to start, and I think I made a tweet about it, asking people how to bootstrap a marketplace or a business that had this sort of really good possibilities. But again, this market is also very saturated, right? I just bootstrap it and I just go with local tools, but I didn't just have the bandwidth. And then secondly, it's that I wasn't really ready to commit my time, money and resources, because I was just going to bootstrap it with my own resources. Like us, the people that were working on it, we're going to bootstrap it with our own resources. And I wasn't sure that maybe I'm overstating how well this could have been a business. Maybe I was just overthinking it. The space is saturated. There are a lot of prediction websites out there, right? But nobody's doing the business model or the angle we're going to play. And even the people that we saw doing like the competition bit and then selling the bets from competition, like we're not doing any kind of sophistication. And even then, the business model was still very different. And so like the way we're going to do this work, I think is way more superior than everything I've seen out there. But again, there's still that sort of fear. It's really when it's not venture funded and it's like I have like responsibilities to take care of. And I think at the end of the day, it's just that I didn't have the bandwidth, and it was that I'm going to shelve this idea maybe for a future date or not. And then the other thing I was then grappling with was that, did I really want to do this? Because, yeah, I want to build a prediction marketplace, but there's still that stain of like, am I encouraging gambling? Right.
OnlyFans.
Yeah. And it's like, I don't think I mean, sure, you can say I am, but what I'm really helping people do is make money. And what I'm building is a prediction marketplace. And so if it's that, am I trying to help people make money on the bookies? Yes, that's what I'm trying to help them do, because if I help them do that, then I'm successful. But am I trying to keep people's money? I think that's fraudulent. That's not what I'm trying to do. Right. And so there was that battle, and it's that, what would people think? But again, what people think is what is marketed at. So I'd say that felt like maybe lower on the stack of like why I didn't do this. But the primary reason is just no bandwidth.
Right. Would you reconsider if after this episode goes on, and then a VC fund comes and meets you and says, hey, how much do you want to do this? would you reconsider then?
Possibly. I mean, it depends on what I'm doing with my life at that point. So, yeah, possibly. But I'd really like to see somebody build this, because I think, and I'd be happy to like download everything that is my brain that has gone through this. But yeah, I'd be like, I want to see this happen.
Yeah, it does sound exciting, to be honest.
Yeah.
Okay. So yeah, how did you ever think that this was going to be a unicorn? And if yes, how long did you think it was going to take you to become a unicorn?
So I think it was a business that was going to print money regardless of whether it was it became a unicorn or not. And so the way I wanted to go about it was that, dude, maybe I can bootstrap this entire thing. It would be painful, but if it's as good as I say, I would probably reach like a significant volume in revenue quite quickly, right? And I'd be able to chill, right? And it's probably just keep on growing at maybe 20%, 50% month on month, right? With me bootstrapping, right? Maybe to be 1 year or 2 years of pain, but to do anything requires a lot of hard work, right? So I think it's a company that'll print cash. In terms of being a unicorn, I think if the bull case proves itself to be true, then yes, it will become a unicorn. And maybe with some venture funding, probably. I mean, unicorns become unicorns because of venture funding.
True.
So, I mean, if there was no venture funding, there wouldn't be unicorns, man. It's the companies making revenue. So, yeah, I think it become a unicorn. I think that with more energy, probably I could quickly get to $10 million in revenue within like 2-3 years. Would I be able to get to $100 million in revenue? I'm not sure, but I think yes, right? If the bull case proves itself to be true, I think reaching 100, 200 million wouldn't be that far off. Because again, I can scale to more markets, non-English speaking markets. There's Spain, there's India, there's Brazil, there's Japan, there's literally every market. And again, it's software, it's content. Translation, turn on translation once, you're fine.
That's the end.
Yeah, it's like, speak to any OTA, any big OTA, that tell you that the moment they turned on translation, they added steps to their revenue. Like, if they're doing like $10 million in revenue, they jumped to $12 million the next day. Mm-hmm. Right?
Oh, that's
so it's like, if I'm doing $100 million in English-speaking market, yeah, turn on translation in Spanish-speaking markets, probably add maybe an extra $20 million almost the next day.
Interesting. I think my final question would be, oh, you have called this business.
You know what? We never actually came up with a name.
Never thought of a name?
Yeah, we never just like got to part of the name.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah, I mean, the name thing would have been important, but it's like, it's like we'll figure out a name bit, we'll figure out all those bits later. So it's like, we're just trying to figure out the business, right? So maybe the audience can like tweet a name at me. What would you guys have called it? If you what listened so far.
Yeah, true. We should actually do that, and possibly, you know, we could give the best name to someone if we want or something.
Yeah, I can tell you $20.
Can I participate? Because I could come up with a bunch of names.
Well, if you want $20, I can just give it right now.
Yeah, okay. Here is the name. Prediction Bookie.
No, we don't want it to be too generic. I mean, we don't want it to be too specific, like, because the idea was that this could become a marketplace for any sort of prediction. So we don't want it to be spots focused, even though we started from spots.
Mercado.
Mercado Libre. What? But, I mean, is there not an e-commerce company in Brazil or in South?
Yeah, but you could use another name. I suppose we started with the English market.
Yeah.
But I think that means marketplace in Spain.
Oh, okay.
So, do I win $20?
No, no, it's not good enough. We need to see options, man.
All right. I hope, this was fun. And I really wish, when it ended up building this. But if you do plan on building this, I think you should definitely reach out to Yemi. Or if you just want to discuss it.
Yeah, and if you have money to give me to build it, I'm not talking about 10K. I mean, like, if you have, like, 200K, because, dude, I need to pay myself, like, a decent salary. Like, I can't be suffering for 2 years. And also, like, developers are expensive these days, man.
Oh, true. That's another kettle of fish right now, man. Because I think everybody wants to be paid, the EU standard, right?
Yeah, at least the EU standard.
Yeah.
And then, because, like, if you were paying the Nigerian standard, you keep the developer for like 3 months, 6 months. We are paying EU standard, maybe 18 months. We are paying US standard.
Yeah.
You would have them for like maybe 24, 36 months.
Yeah.
And we are paying Silicon Valley standard. They're not living. But actually, they are living because we've paid them enough money for them to go like...
Yeah, do their own thing. But that's true. That's crazy. But yes, if you have a lot of money, please reach out to them to do this. I'd invest. I think my 5,000 naira can get me 0.0% 0.0000% And my, who knows, that 5K might help us to $50,000.
Yeah.
Sometime. All right. It's been great recording this. Yemi, do you have any final words for them?
No. It's like, I think we should do this some more.
Yeah, we should definitely should. We should definitely should think about ideas and then just change our parts.
Yeah, like, I don't know, our beauty. Yeah. But this took, like, this entire thing took me, like, 8 weeks. Well, I mean, not like I wasn't going for 8 weeks, but, like, maybe combined hours being taught about it and speaking to other people. Yeah. Because also I have co-founders, so that I'm clear. And, but I'd say combined hours, it's, say, 40 hours of, like, just thinking about this. And so imagine what we could have gotten with maybe hundreds of hours of thinking about this problem.
True. That's something. I think 40 hours is what you're meant to work in a week.
Yeah.
That's what we call work.
Yeah.
9 to 5. All right. Yeah, we definitely should do another episode of this.
Mm-hmm.
It's been fun and I really enjoyed it.
Yeah. Okay, guys, thanks a lot for listening. You can find this podcast on any podcast player. Please rate us positively and drop reviews also on the podcast player. We really appreciate it. Follow us on Twitter at Teardown Podcast. And please share this podcast with your friends. And if you don't like this podcast, Inam, what are they?
You're a witch.
It's as simple as that.
Have a great day.